Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The Missouri History Museum has a new president and CEO. We're going to be talking about that a little later in the program. But first, crime statistics in the region are always subject to some scrutiny. Overall, crime is down almost 5.5% in the city of St. Louis, 7.4% in unincorporated St. Louis County. Although the region is fragmented, and as the St. Louis Police Chief says, criminals don't recognize borders, St. Louis City statistics are always analyzed with special interest. That's our focus on today's program. The recently released 2013 numbers are something of a mixed bag. Overall, major crime is down 5.4% over the previous year, continuing a trend of more than half a decade. However, two key areas, rape and homicide, are up. And certain neighborhoods are especially hard hit, continuing a trend of its own. I'm Don Marsh. We're taking a close look at the numbers and what they mean on today's program. With me in studio, Rick Rosenfeld, criminology professor at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. He has been working as an analyst consultant with the St. Louis Police Department. Joining us a little bit later, Alderman Antonio French, representing the 21st Ward in North St. Louis. He's a member of the Public Safety Committee, as is Alderman Craig Schmid, who represents the 20th Ward in South St. Louis. But first, we'll chat a bit with Rick Rosenfeld. Rick, nice to see you again.
Good to see you, Don.
You look at this as a positive report?
Generally, yes. It continues a trend we've seen now over the last half dozen years at least, welcome downward trend. Between 2012 and 2013, violent crimes declined in the city of St. Louis by just over 10%, property crimes by about 4%. That's good news. You mentioned rape and homicide as exceptions. Now, the issue of rape is a somewhat separate one. The FBI changed its very narrow and outmoded definition of rape last year, and local police departments were recording rapes according to the new, more expanded definition. Everybody is up in rape. That's a one-year adjustment. I wouldn't make much of that. In the case of homicide, the city is up a bit over last year. There were 120 homicides recorded in the city in 2013 compared to 113 the year before. It's about a 6% increase, and obviously that has to be watched. Overall, though, I think putting it in context, the report is pretty much what we've been seeing over the last several years, a welcome downward trend.
And this downward trend is not unique to St. Louis, apparently.
It is not. lots of cities over the last year, including some cities that are very high-risk places, have recorded downturns. Oakland, California, for example, which has had its violent crime problems, had a close to 30% decrease in its homicides in the last year. Chicago, which has been in the news over the last year or so with its homicide problem, recorded just over a 17% decrease over the last year. A little closer to home, Kansas City is basically flat in homicides over the last year. Washington, D.C. is up a bit, but most of that increase was due to that mass shooting in the Navy Yard in D.C. So generally speaking, we're seeing a downward trend across the country with some exceptions. Indianapolis, for example, not too far from St. Louis, is up over last year. St. Louis does not, if you put it in comparative context, does not appear all that distinct from other places. Let's go back 5 years and compare St. Louis to all cities with 250,000 population or greater. Over that period, violent crime has dropped in the city by about 14% altogether, property crime closer to 20%. In cities, in the comparison cities of over 250,000, violent crime has dropped about 16%, pretty much the same. Property crime about 11%. So St. Louis is showing a sharper decline in property crime, about the same in violent crime in its five-year trend compared to all cities with over 250,000 population.
Before we talk specifically about what's going on and why in St. Louis, let's talk in general terms about why the numbers seem to be down in some of these hard scrapple places that you were talking about. What's going on?
Well, I think two things. We have to divide the change over time into local, influences and more national influences. Now, when you see city after city after city declining, then it's unlikely that local factors are responsible in each and every case. Although I do think that smarter policing has become quite widespread in the U.S., and St. Louis would be included there. But there are clearly other factors at work. The aging of the population is one such factor. Also, and I think for some of your listeners, it may come as some surprise, but the economy is a factor, I believe, and my research shows, in the continuing decline we've seen. One of the economic indicators we don't talk about much these days, but some of your listeners and you and I will remember when inflation was all the rage in terms of economic indicators back in the day when we suffered from what was called stagflation, high unemployment and inflation. Inflation has been running at record lows over the last several years, including during the period of the Great Recession. And for a variety of reasons, inflation is connected to crime. If prices are going up, there's an incentive for people who steal for a living to do more of that because they're going to get more for what they steal and resell. But if prices are flat or even down in some cases, those incentives weaken. So inflation is something to watch, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing an overall flat or declining crime rate. But then there are those local factors that matter as well.
Yeah. You know, it's almost counterintuitive, and you and I have had this discussion before, because I think a lot of people might assume, and I certainly have in the past, that when times are tough, when jobs are – when people are unemployed, that there is a desperation in the air, and that would induce more crime.
Yeah. Well, I'm not suggesting it doesn't. The people who do engage in crime, the communities that are beset by high levels of crime chronically, are desperate people and desperate places most often. But there are other things that matter as well. People who commit crime, by and large, do so for the economic gain that they perceive. And so we have to look at a broader range of economic conditions beyond the unemployment rate, beyond income. We have to look at prices as well. And prices have behaved well with respect to crime rates over the last now several years, going back even to the early 1990s.
Okay. Now let's take a closer look at what's going on here. The number of murders is up, I think you said 6%, just five or six more murders than the year before.
Correct.
But one of the things we noticed, Rick, is that most of these murders are taking place in a very small portion of the city. What's that telling us?
Well, what that's telling us is the same thing that's occurring in every major city. That is, and you know, I've gone on and on about this on this program and elsewhere. When we look at city crime rates, we have to be careful not to assume that all neighborhoods in the city are behaving like the average rate would suggest. In fact, city crime rates are made up of very, very high crime neighborhoods on the one hand, and in just about every city I'm familiar with, including St. Louis, the majority of neighborhoods where crime is relatively low. But it's those high crime neighborhoods that generate disproportionate increases or declines when they come down. And that is the case in St. Louis. So as your listeners will hear later in the program, there are neighborhoods in the city of St. Louis that remain high-risk, distressed places. There are many, many other neighborhoods in the city where crime, the serious crime we've been talking about, homicide, shootings, serious assault, is not so much of a problem. Car cloudings, that is to say car break-ins, garage break-ins, that sort of thing, much more widespread and a chronic nuisance or more than simply a nuisance elsewhere.
I think there is a tendency in the part of this community to think that when we talk about the neighborhoods where crime is high, we're always pointing toward North St. Louis. Is that necessarily the case still?
It is not necessarily the case still. There are places in South St. Louis with crime rates. You may hear a bit about that later in the program that are distressingly high. North St. Louis is depopulating, South St. Louis less so, and so more and more people in those high-crime neighborhoods in South St. Louis are being exposed to higher risk. So the city has its crime problem that challenges it. I should mention that, in my view, the city is responding effectively. You may hear a different story later in the program, but by and large, I think the police department specifically has responded effectively to the crime issues that it and the rest of the community faces.
That brings us to the issue which we have talked about before, and that's the hotspot policing.
Correct.
I assume that that's what you're referring to.
It is. That's, I think, a deceptively simple strategy. You know, one might think, gee, the police have always gone where the crime was. And in fact, that's not altogether true. Up through even the mid-1990s in many places, the police were deployed on a beat basis. And whether the beat had high crime or low crime, you'd see pretty much the same number of officers patrolling the area. What's happened since then, and especially in the last decade, is the so-called hotspot strategy has taken over, where based on real-time or near real-time crime statistics, the police are deployed to relatively small areas where crime is high or is spiked. And deploying more police to an area does reduce crime in the area, at least over the short run. The St. Louis Police Department has engaged in specific highly publicized interventions, like in College Hill last year and elsewhere, and also less highly publicized activities of the hotspot sort. And our research shows that they are effective in reducing crime.
Is it the visibility issue? Is it that what we're talking about? There are more evidence of police in these areas?
Certainly. If one assumes, and I think it's a reasonable assumption, that people who are about to commit a crime or inclined to commit crime are less likely to do so when the police are around or when they think they're right around the corner, yes, visibility matters. But it's not simply visibility. It's also what the police do when they're in a high crime area. And those activities that seem most effective are inspecting occupied vehicles, unoccupied vehicles, doing building inspections, foot patrols, and the like.
Before we bring in our other guests, just a couple of other issues I want to raise. The number of districts in the city of St. Louis is being reduced from 9 to 6, I
Correct.
Believe. I want to talk very quickly about the impact that's having. And local control is now something that has taken place effective last summer. Are these two issues having any impact, or is it too early to tell?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. And frankly, I don't think either will have an important impact in terms of how citizens perceive police services in the city. They will have, and have certainly local control, has had an impact in terms of the independence of the police department and indeed the city of St. Louis with respect to policing from the state of Missouri. Long, long overdue. In the case of the reduction in districts from 9 to 6, also, I believe, long overdue. You know, when a city loses 100,000 or more of its population, one might expect that the number of police districts would decline somewhat. I think the move from 9 to 6 will not result in reduced services to citizens in any area of the city. Will result in efficiencies in resources that the department sorely needs.
That's Rick Rosenfeld. He is a criminology professor at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. We're talking about the most recent crime statistics for the city of St. Louis. We're going to continue that conversation after a break. And after that break, we'll also bring in two members of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen who live in districts that have significant crime issues. And we'll get their take on the statistics and some of the things that are going on to deal with the crime issue in the city of St. Louis. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on the crime statistics in the city of St. Louis. But here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio and the Beacon Newsroom following today. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon is preparing to deliver his annual State of the State address at the Capitol tonight. Nixon is expected to call for significant funding increases for Missouri's public schools. You can hear the speech and the Republican response tonight on St. Louis Public Radio. That begins at 7 o'clock. The Missouri History Museum today named Francis Levine as its new president and CEO. Levine is currently the director of the New Mexico History Museum. Her contract was approved this morning by the museum's board of trustees and members of the ZMD Museum Subdistrict. A little later in the program, we'll hear from our reporter Nancy Fowler, who had an exclusive interview with the new director. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to the discussion on crime in the city of St. Louis. Joining us in studio is Alderman Antonio French of the 21st Ward in North St. Louis, and Craig Schmidt represents the 20th Ward in South St. Louis. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Antonio French, let me begin with you. Your take on the recent crime statistics released last week.
You know, what I'm most concerned about is the rise in homicides and the continued violence in the city. You know, it's one thing to measure slight increases or decline year to year, but the real thing is the measure of the human toll. You're talking about 120 people murdered, you know, 1,600 assaults with guns in the city. You know, what we're seeing here, too, is that, you know, just as in many urban areas, you have a division between haves and have-nots. What we're starting to see more and more is a division between safe neighborhoods and unsafe neighborhoods. So roughly one-third of the city's population lives in areas where there were zero homicides. And then another third of the city lives in areas where there were approximately 100 per 100,000. So, I mean, I'm concerned about that, and we want to make sure our city is safe for all people, no matter where they live in it.
Rick Rosenfeld, that confirms exactly what you said just a couple of moments ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Greg Schmidt, your take.
Well, and statistics tell us something about the situation, but for a person who's a victim of a crime, crime is 100%. So we tend to look at the block-to-block sort of situation and try to work with people to try to prevent them from becoming a crime victim, because once we get the report card at the end of the year, it's a little late to really do anything about it.
What's the situation in your ward?
Well, apparently, crime is down in most categories. Murder is down by almost half. Rape has gone up, and I think Dr. Rosenfeld talked about that. Robbery, armed robbery, is almost half of what it was last year. Aggravated assault is up. Auto theft, and so we need to get more of those provisions to safeguard cars and people to be careful about that. But overall, since 2009, the total crime index is down. It was 1330 in 2009. It's 983 in 2013. And I attribute that to the individuals within those neighborhoods, some doing a better job than others, but really working on some of these issues.
Antonio French, your ward?
Yeah, crime is always a struggle. You know, we picked up a part of the College Hill neighborhood in redistricting. And so, as I'm sure even your listeners know, College Hill has seen a lot of violence this last year. Our surveillance camera system we found has helped out a lot in those areas we installed it in. We've been looking to expand that. There are no cameras over in College Hill, for instance, right now. That neighborhood is divided among three wards, and we've had a little resistance in expanding that system. And so the 3rd Ward, the 4th Ward, and the 27th Ward have been wanting to expand the camera system and haven't had a lot of support in that. I think, you know, innovative techniques like that are added tools to help police. You know, it's one thing that there is the occurrence of violence, but I think what really perpetuates it is the lack of closure and the lack of arrest made in some of these most violent cases. You know, one of the things that came out of the last Public Safety Committee hearing is that 2 out of 5 homicides in the city goes unsolved. And so that can, you know, that doesn't give a lot of faith, number one, for people to cooperate. And number two, that it allows the same people to repeatedly commit the same offense over and over.
Rick, that number surprises me. I had not heard that, the number of unsolved homicides in the city.
Yeah, and St. Louis is really not distinct from other large cities in that the homicide, so-called homicide clearance rate, the number of arrests made divided by the number of homicides, the clearance rate has been coming down over the last couple of decades in the U.S. across major cities. St. Louis is not distinct. I agree with Alderman French. It is a very distressing statistic. It's important to understand part of the reason why, though. The homicide homicides that occur these days are more difficult to clear because they often involve victims and associates of victims who are themselves criminally involved and loathe, reluctant to cooperate with the police. And as the alderman mentioned, and Bill McClellan pointed out in his column the other day, persons in the neighborhood are often fearful of retaliation from those associated with either the offender or the victim, and for that reason are reluctant to cooperate with the police. So we have a mix of homicides these days that are more difficult to clear than was the case a couple of decades ago.
How do you turn that around, Alderman French? And I'll get to Alderman Schmidt in just a moment, because apparently it's working to some degree in your ward with regard to neighborhood people, residents cooperating. And yet you just indicate this is not happening because people are concerned where you are. How do you change that around, turn that around?
Well, first, the description that Mr. Rosenfeld gave, that this is also a narrative that the chief often touts, that somehow the lack of closure of these homicides is the fault or partly to blame because of either the victims or the community. I think that's a very dangerous narrative. I don't think you need to blame victims. And you need to, I think, be somewhat apathetic and understand the situation that folks are living in these communities. Many of them are making very rational decisions why they do not cooperate. They see the end results very often, and it is not storybook. It's not law and order. There is not a quick, justice does not act quickly, and a lot of them rightfully feel unsafe. And I think the responsibility then falls upon the police department and the city to make them feel safe, to prove to them that cooperating actually will lead to results. So it raises the standards of what we must do to deliver effective customer service. And the other thing is that, the population of the city of St. Louis, or specifically North St. Louis, is not that much different than the population of, say, North County. The closure rate, however, there is much higher than it is on this side of the county line. And so I think it is possible for us to get better results, and I don't think we should just take solace that, well, everybody's kind of failing. We need to do better, and the only way we're going to succeed as a city is if we do better.
Well, I certainly understand that, but again, getting back to the issue of the responsibility of residents to play a greater role somehow. Is this something that you can see happening? And if it's not happening, why isn't it?
So we've done we've been a big supporter of the neighborhood ownership model. This is a model that actually involves citizens, get them more active and involved. The challenge that we've seen, a lot has been made of this no snitching policy, and that's probably been around for many, many years, especially among the young people. What we've seen, though, is that one of the challenges in the city of St. Louis is that those natural allies we should have, like senior citizens, they're not wanting to cooperate as much anymore. And a lot of them have been burned before. A lot of them report that, they've been they felt like they've been outed by the officer coming to their door. They feel unsafe after the officer leaves. So these are things that I think the police department needs to do a better job at building that level of trust with the community.
Mm-hmm. Alderman Schmidt, again, you're getting a somewhat different response, apparently.
Well, I'm concerned about the level of cooperation as well. And I think part of what the chief has been talking about in terms of going back to some of the specific beats is hopeful in the community-oriented police, because people do, many people have a distrust. We have immigrants from other countries who had officials who they could not trust, and we have others who have had negative situations with the police department. So that cooperation with an officer coming into the situation and not treating everybody as the bad guy. Currently, because historically in this country we were concerned about corruption and so forth, we didn't want to have a police officer in one place too long. I'm hearing now that we do want our officers so they can create those relationships. Those relationships are just as important as effective other aspects of effective policing. In terms of the neighborhood working, I want to give a shout out to Gravelite Park, because they've been doing court watch, because just after the police apprehend somebody, we're talking about the clearance rate. If it's going through and we are getting a good clearance rate, then we want to make sure that the people who are guilty are getting adequate sentences and that the judges understand the impact on the community. So that's part of the neighborhood ownership model. That's a fancy new term, but we've been doing that sort of thing for years.
And Craig, I agree with you, too, that in order to get more participation, it involves building trust.
Absolutely.
And like any relationship, you know, building trust involves work on both sides.
Both sides, correct.
Rick, what are you hearing here?
I'm hearing that the police and the city have a responsibility to assist residents in, let's call it self-protection and strengthening neighborhoods. I think that's so, and I think that's a quite legitimate challenge to pose to both the city and the police, and it's not an easy one. And so I think what I would certainly like to hear are more specific suggestions about just ways in which the police can assist the citizenry in cooperating where necessary. And part of what I'm hearing is that the police and the prosecutor's office and perhaps also the courts need to deliver on their end so citizens get the sense that cooperation will lead to consequences.
Yeah, and I'll give you a specific example, Rick. So, for instance, the neighborhood ownership model, this is actually one of the things that Chief Dotson came to the Public Safety Committee and said he was a big supporter of. It's actually implemented differently in different neighborhoods. So, for instance, a neighborhood like Lafayette Square, which may have about a population, correct me if I'm wrong, about 2,000, they have their own officer. And so in my ward, under the previous chief, we were given an officer. But this officer has now been split among three neighborhoods. So our one officer deals with a population of about 15,000. So it's not, you know, he's not able to build quite the same relationships that we would like to see. And so I think it does involve a commitment of resources to actually make this thing work and a long-term commitment to build that trust.
I have a tweet here from our own Rachel Littman, who was asking, how does the way political maps are drawn affect crime fighting in the city, or do they?
Well, you know, I was involved in not this past redistricting, but the redistricting before. And again, I prefer to be proactive, and I think a lot of things in terms of service delivery, amounts of investment for housing, schools, all those kind of things have an impact on crime. And so when we had the redistricting map, it was so gerrymandered that the accountability that folks could have with regard to their elected officials was not really apparent. It was good that we had two aldermen who were working well together in that particular area. But the other thing was, for about 3 years, I had no community development block grant dollars that were essentially coming into the ward. The ward was not standing still. And so I was not in a position to try to get some of those investments in the area. Lack of investment, lack of obvious caring about a neighborhood has an impact on crime, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you see, obviously, is that crime is higher in unstable neighborhoods.
Correct.
And so if there's a way that political boundaries affects that, you know, I'll take an example like College Hill. College Hill is a very destabilized neighborhood, and that neighborhood is actually split among three wards. And so no one ward, no one alderman has complete responsibility for College Hill. And, in fact, each little section they have of College Hill only represents a very small percentage of their ward. And so it's easy for an area like that to get neglected, and you see the consequences. It becomes one of the most violent, most abandoned neighborhoods in the city.
I have an email here from John, who lives on the east side of the Del Mar Loop, and he said there's been a lot of crime, a lot of incidents in his area. And he says, the only time I get anywhere with police who don't seem to respond very well is when I involve my alderman. I don't think I should have to get my alderman involved anytime the police are not needed, as this is not their job. Is that a valid point, Rick?
It certainly seems like a valid point from John's perspective, and I would say if John hasn't already, he should immediately contact the police district captain in that area and complain.
Alderman Schmidt?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I can't second guess what his experience is. I've had some good luck with some captains and not as good luck with other captains, and so I don't know how to respond to that. I'm not spending every day following up on the police department, but I do try to make sure they're aware of things that are happening.
Antonio French.
You know, I think it is a big concern for a lot of folks in respect to the delivery of a lot of different city services. And very often part of our job, and Craig definitely knows this, is being a liaison between citizens and city government. And a lot of times, you know, we shouldn't have to intervene. It should just happen. You know, as a citizen, as a taxpayer, you should get that level of service just because.
You know, Alderman French was talking about unstable neighborhoods. And if I could only plead with one group, that would be owners of property who have investment properties for renters. And many of our issues, it seems like we have absentee landlords who feel very comfortable with the areas where they live, and they would not want some of the people sometimes, not in all instances, but in some instances, living next to them that they put in properties next to us. And that tends to be the major part of what we deal with on a daily basis. It's a small percentage of those investors, but it drives us crazy.
Does this show up in any of your stats, Rick Rosenfeld?
Certainly. Abandoned property, vacant properties, are correlated with higher crime rates. There's no question about that.
Now, minor occupied properties.
Occupied properties that are abused or mishandled by their owners is something that it's difficult to measure in the data that I see, but I have no doubt that it matters.
This all kind of falls in line with the so-called broken windows theory, doesn't it? If property is allowed to deteriorate, this is an evidence that criminals or people, wrongdoers, have a free hand.
Yeah, I think that's true, although I think what the alderman's suggesting, correct me if I'm wrong, Craig, is that owners, absentee owners who don't care as much as they should about the property are permitting people to stay at the property long after they should have been evicted. That, I think, is the complaint one hears about some absentee owners.
But I'm definitely a believer in this broken window theory. And you know, we've seen it in smaller sections in my ward. And over in College Hill, you know, the largest property owner in the College Hill neighborhood is the city of St. Louis. It's mostly abandoned property at this point owned by the LRA. And as you know, the LRA does not do a great job at maintaining its properties. And so most of their windows are broken, and you're sometimes lucky if you still have four walls. And so that's a tough area to stabilize.
If I go down an area, if I go through that alley, I can pretty much tell you whether they have a crime problem or not just by looking at the alley. And so people who are vigilant, thank you very much.
Have to take a break. Let's do that. We're talking about crime in the city of St. Louis in view of the most recent crime statistics, which came out recently. My guests in studio are criminologist Rick Rosenfeld from the University of Missouri, St. Louis. We have two aldermen with us, Antonio French of the 21st Ward and Craig Schmidt, who represents the 20th Ward. Back in just a moment. We'd love to get you into the conversation as time allows. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK. If you'd like to send us an email, do so at talk@stlpublicradio.com. We'll also take a tweet at STL on Air. Come on into the conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We continue our conversation on crime in the city of St. Louis and what's being done about it. And we look at the most recent crime statistics for the city of St. Louis. With me in studio, criminologist Rick Rosenfeld from the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Two aldermen are with us, Craig Schmidt from the 20th Ward and Alderman Antonio French, who is from the 21st Ward. Do I have that right or did I reverse that?
That's right.
Yeah, I had it right. Okay. Rick, let me come back to you because something that was mentioned earlier that I wanted to follow up on from Alderman French concerning surveillance cameras. How many of these things are in St. Louis? And we haven't really talked about that. They should be and apparently are somewhat effective.
I don't know the number. I mean, it depends on how one counts them. There are public cameras. There are private cameras to which the police have some access. There are private cameras to which the police don't have much access. So the total number is large, but I simply don't know how many. On effectiveness, as Alderman French knows, we did do an evaluation of the impact of the cameras in Alderman French's ward on crime, and we did find an impact that persisted for roughly speaking 3 months or so, and then we saw crime begin to drift back to where it was prior to where the cameras were installed, and that's comparing the areas with the cameras to other areas without cameras. Now, Alderman French has made some good points, I think, about the limitations of that study. He points out that some of the cameras may be much more effective than others. And we didn't look on a camera-by-camera basis. But I think what we found is pretty generally true of surveillance cameras, They can be effective in reducing crime. They certainly are effective in assisting investigations. But I think, frankly, the most important impact of the camera is preventing crime from occurring in the first place. And they can be effective in that regard if they are continuously monitored and well-publicized, as Alderman French did when those cameras were installed, and continuously publicized so people know they're there. It makes no sense to me from a deterrence perspective to have cameras up but not publicize them so people don't know they're there. So they can be effective. They have to be monitored continuously.
Yeah, so I'm obviously a big supporter of surveillance cameras. We've built this very large system in the 21st Ward. We found it to be very effective, especially in those areas that were really crime hotspots. There's a stretch of Lee Avenue between Fair and Newstead that was basically an open-air drug market. We had several shootings and murders in one summer on that one strip. And after installing the surveillance cameras and doing some neighborhood improvements, knocking down some vacant buildings, cleaning up that area, we've not had those problems on Lee Avenue anymore. And as far as the study that Rick did, as he says, I had some advice or comments about the study. And I always think it's helpful, in addition to looking at the numbers, to come to the community and actually speak to folks in that neighborhood. And so it's always been my belief that cameras, for instance, on Lee Avenue would be more effective immediately in reducing crime than, say, the cameras we've installed on Natural Bridge, which is a very busy main road, a lot of commercial traffic. That being said, you know, when we first started installing the system, this was under Chief Isom. And Chief Isom, I felt, was much more supportive of the project. We had a neighborhood officer at that time who was just assigned to O'Fallon and Penrose, and actually some of her duties at the time were to watch the surveillance cameras. I've been disappointed with Chief Dotson, who has been basically anti-surveillance camera and has actually flatly refused to allow an officer to monitor the cameras at all. So I agree with Rick is that monitored cameras are better. And so this summer, what we're going to do is wind up having to hire our own folks to watch those surveillance cameras. The other thing I will add, though, is that in addition to acting as a deterrent, back to our earlier conversations, what the cameras do is provide a witness to a crime. When there is no other witness willing to come forward, those cameras we have found been very helpful in providing evidence that has led to convictions in violent crimes. And for that, they are completely invaluable.
What do they cost? Just in a word or two.
So total over the last 3 years of expanding the system, we might be at around $600,000.
Well, no wonder they're not all over the city.
And I'm an advocate as well. Some leaders in the Gravoy Park neighborhood.
Do you have any in your ward?
I do not, okay. But would like to have some and want to work with the chief in terms of finding the best way to do this.
Rick, why you're in a consultant with the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. Why do you think the chief might not be so enthusiastic about cameras?
Well, you know, frankly, I have to say that's the first I've heard that he's hostile to cameras or opposed to cameras. I wasn't aware of that. I certainly haven't heard him say that. I should mention, too, that I am consulting with the police department as part of a public safety partnership. But I'm not paid by the police department or the city. I'm paid by the university. And when I have occasion to disagree with a city official or the chief, I certainly will. But again, I'm not aware that the chief is actively opposed or dislikes for some reason cameras. He may. I just simply am not aware of
that. Yeah, we've actually had a pretty public debate about this, and I think it might have been KSDK or KMOV at the time, where he said that he didn't think it was the best use of police resources to monitor these cameras.
Mm-hmm. Well, in my circumstance, I'm looking for people who are already out there doing mobile patrol who would be at home monitoring this, obviously not 24 hours a day, but...
All right. Let's go to the phones. We have a number of callers, and we'll get them into this discussion. Maxine is calling from University City, so let's bring Maxine in. Go ahead, Maxine.
Hi. I just want to mention when it comes to people not reporting crimes they may have knowledge of, I was told by a middle school student in a very nice North County district that snitches get stitches, and I think that's been replaced by talkers get walkers. So I think the cameras are irreplaceable. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Maxine, for the call. I think that point can stand on its own. Let's bring in Tom calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay, yeah. I was calling basically regarding, like, when I'm driving around the city, I do cable, and so I see on the south side, there's always a lot of cop cars parked up, probably in front of their homes, as opposed to the north side. And I think that has an effect, just like a visual deterrence for people that are going to commit crimes. I just wanted to hear your comments on that.
All right, Tom, we got you that time. Who wants to respond? Well, is there a disparity here?
I don't know if there's a disparity, but I would agree that, and I think Dr. Rosenfeld mentioned this earlier, when there's a bubble of good behavior. I've been in a police car before, and when you go around, you don't see the crime that you see when you're in your own car. And so sometimes I bring police captains in my car so they actually see the crime that's occurring. So if there's a police car, if it's there for 2 years, obviously it's not going to have an impact. If it's there for a day or two, I think it might have an impact.
Yeah, and it is. Visibility, as was mentioned before, has a big effect. And I think one of the differences in, say, South Side districts versus North Side district, especially with the current allocation of resources, is that many officers in, say, 6th district or 8th district are spending most of their time responding to calls. And so it's not a lot of time to just do patrolling. And so, when you go into the Central West End or you go into other areas, you do see more patrolling because there's less calls for service. I think the chief has talked about in this redistricting of police districts, he's very proud that he's allocating resources equally. I would argue that some districts, especially those with more violent crime, may need more resources, not just equal resources, for that same reason.
Your position on hotspot policing, which is getting a lot of attention.
Hotspot policing is whoever coined that phrase is a marketing genius. It's basically just another way to say crime is over there, let's go over there. Crime is over here, now let's go over here. Let's go over here. So that's what happened. And, yeah, anytime you flood an area, like you say, with high visibility, you flood an area with a large number of police officers, crime will go down. And when you remove them, crime will go up.
Right. By the way, an observation, when we saw the calls for service, actually in the city of St. Louis, the first district had the highest calls for service. So the new redistricting is supposed to be set up so that there's equivalent resources. The chief has said so that one-third of their time is spent administratively for reports and in court, one-third for responding to 911 calls, and one-third to be proactive, and that's very important.
We've got limited time left, but I want to try to get Deborah into the conversation. She's calling from North St. Louis. Deborah, go ahead, but make it a quick question or comment, please.
I've lived in North St. Louis for over a year now. I'm a white disabled senior. Many times when I get on the bus, I'm one of the only white people or the only. And also, I've gone to a church that was one of the only white people. And in both of those places, I was treated very kindly. I've never had any trouble in North St. Louis. And as far as homeless people, I've been homeless a bunch of times. I've stayed in shelters in other states, in St. Louis, too. It's not a very nice place to stay, and there's never enough room for all the homeless people. And so some of them have to sleep in other places. And the ones I know, none of them are criminals.
All right, Deborah, thank you so much for the call. Our time is beginning to get away. I don't know if there's much to react to with regard to what she said. We sympathize with some of the things she said and glad to hear that she's getting along so well with the people that are around her. What about 2014? We've got a minute left, Rick Rosenfeld. What's the action plan for 2014?
I think from what I understand, more of the same, yet more so. Alderman Schmidt mentioned that the ideal would be at least one-third of an officer's time devoted to proactive activity. I hope it's more than one-third, frankly, yeah, because that kind of proactive activity we've been talking about really has a crime reduction impact. So, and from what I've heard, that is the general desire on the part of the command staff of the police department to do as much proactive policing, i.e. hotspot policing, as they're able to.
We're going to have to leave it at that. I want to thank you, Rick Rosenfeld, for being with us, Rick, criminologist at the University of Missouri St. Louis. Alderman Antonio French, thank you for being with us once again. Good to see you. And Alderman Craig Schmidt,
thank you.
To see you again. Thanks so much. Good luck in your respective wards and hope things are better this year even than they were previously. Thank you again.